Hey friends, this episode does contain slightly more graphic content as we discuss topics like human sacrifice. Keep this in mind when choosing when and where to listen. Two brothers farming peat make a gruesome discovery. A human body, who didn't appear to have been dead for very long. The police were notified of the presumed murder victim, but this was no recent murder. This is the story of the Toland Man. Ooh, are you ready for this, Tayshia?
I am so ready.
So hello and welcome back, dearest listeners, to Odd Anthropology. I learned a new job title recently that I would like to use for us, Tayshia, if that's okay. Oral newsmongers. Thoughts? It was an actual job way back in the olden days. People that would gather bits of news and gossip, and they would just stand around public spaces and just yell it for passersby to hear. And what are we? If not oral newsmongers, am I right?
Yeah, I like it.
Okay, I can't argue with my logic. anyways, my name is Ivy Boyd, and with me is the one and only...
I am Tayshia Koster.
Koster, yay. And I think I'm just going to go ahead and jump right in, because I have 8 pages of notes to get through, so everybody... buckle up. Real quick, if you are a brand new listener and you are someone who listens out of order and you have not listened to episode 2 yet, I suggest checking that out first and then coming back to this one, because I do go over some bog science in episode 2, like what is a bog, why do they preserve bodies so well, and to avoid too much redundancy and adding a whole other page to my 8 pages of notes, I will not get too much into it. Again, so let's talk about the Toland Man. My love of bog bodies and thus the Toland Man first began years ago when I went to a traveling exhibition called Body Worlds, which displays preserved human bodies. I have since learned that Body Worlds, have you ever heard of Body Worlds, Tayshia?
Yeah, I remember them like being up at the Science Museum up in Minneapolis or St. Paul, whichever of the Twin Cities it is. But I remember that exhibit coming through.
Yeah, they went through.
I don't necessarily remember if I saw it, but I remember hearing about it.
Okay. I went when they went through Kansas City when I was still living there. And I have since learned, some people listening may have seen recent headlines, they are apparently quite controversial in how some bodies are sourced and displayed. I'm not going to really get into that because I have too much to talk about already, but I have been to Body Worlds and it was my first time encountering a bog body, which they did have on display. Well, it wasn't a full bog body, it was a bog body part, because a lot of bog bodies are kind of chopped up by machinery, which I'll talk about later on in the episode. But that's a little bit of Ivy lore, when my bog obsession began and why I would eventually come across the Toland Man, and thus why I'm sitting here talking about him today. So who is the Toland Man? It was May 6th, 1950, near Silkeborg, when two brothers from Toland, Denmark, Viggo and Emil Hoyga, were cutting peat in a nearby bog, Bjelskevdel. Like anyone happening across a human corpse, they were alarmed and notified the police as soon as they could, having assumed that they just found a recent murder victim, which would make sense. Someone locally had gone missing. When they go missing, people presume the worst, they might have been killed. And they thought that this might be the missing person. But upon the arrival of not only police, but also local museum employees, they would realize that the man that they found, now known, of course, as the Toland Man, was in fact from the Iron Age, having been dated as living sometime between 405 and 380 BCE. In other words, he is over 2,000 years old. So very, very old.
Yeah, dang.
Finding a 2,000-year-old human body is crazy, but if this doesn't sound impressive enough already, hearing about the condition he was in makes it all the more magnificent. Some bog bodies, for lack of a better word, look like a pile of black leathery goop from being crushed by the weight of peat and chopped up by machinery. But not the Toland man. He really stood the test of time, almost just completely untouched. And his face especially looks frozen in time. You can see his soft and almost peaceful facial expression with his slightly furrowed brow. You can see his wrinkles and his pores, his eyelashes. He has all of his hair stubble on his face and short hair on his head. Even his fingernails and internal organs are all still there. And sadly, the leather rope used to hang him, which was still around his neck. Another reason why when the men found him and they see this rope around his neck, they're like, we just found like someone that's been murdered. So he was found in a crouched or fetal position and appeared to be unclothed, minus a leather belt and a cap atop his head and the rope. It is possible, though, that he had been wearing other clothes upon his death and then bog burial, but fabrics made from vegetable fibers will break down in bogs. All of this to say that he basically looks exactly as he did the day he died and was laid to rest in the bog, minus the discoloration of his skin and some of his visible bones. But I can't stress this enough for anyone listening who's never heard of the Toland man. Gazing upon his face is so humanizing. And we've seen a lot of ancient mummified people. It's nothing new, but we had never seen one quite like the Toland man. We don't have to imagine what he looked like alive. We don't have to create like recreations of trying to imagine what he looked like alive, because you just look at him and that's what he looked like pretty much. So
everyone go hit pause, go Google the Toland man and take a look and then come back and we'll be here waiting for you.
Yeah. Come back and you'll see why I'm like fangirling and I have an entire paragraph just about how crazy it is that this guy just looks like he did 2,000 years ago. And because of how well preserved he is, we are also able to gather insights into his life and death, which you very often cannot get with a lot of ancient human remains or burials because of how remarkably preserved him and other bog bodies are. So, upon his excavation, they commissioned a custom box to transport the remains, which were packed with the surrounding peat to ensure that conditions wouldn't change too rapidly and cause sudden decomposition. Toland Man was then transported by a horse-drawn carriage, which really dates the story, to Mosland, and then taken by train to Copenhagen's National Museum. It is here that the remains were first extensively photographed for documentation before they made their way to Bispega Hospital, where an autopsy took place.
Oh.
Between testing done then and now, because we've learned a lot more about him in more recent decades, we have gathered that Toland Man had been about 30 to 40 years old at the time of his death. He was about 5'3" tall, although there is some shrinkage in bog mummification and following preservation, so he may have been a wee bit taller. And fractures to some of the bones in his neck would also just provide further evidence that hanging was the cause of death. They were even able to test remnants of his last meal, which remained preserved in his digestive system, which was a type of...
Dang.
It's so cool. It was a type of porridge. And get this. So back in the 1950s, they were actually able to identify specific grains used for the porridge. And so they recreated it.
Oh, wow.
An archaeologist, Sir Mortimer Wheeler, tried it for a TV program. And he commented that it was awful and that the Toland man was probably probably glad to die after eating such a meal. I know, it's so bad. Like, RIP to old man, I'm so sorry. That is a little bit funny. So there's that fun fact.
I suppose, could they like tell it what seasonings and stuff there might have been, or what as well, or they could just tell the grains? So maybe there was some more like seasoning to it.
They could tell other elements of it. I'll talk about this a little bit later on when we get to ritual human sacrifice, but there was also a little bit of ergot, a type of fungus that affects the grain. So they can see things like that. So I mean, surely they didn't feed the TV anchor ergot infected grains, because that's not good. So although science can tell us many interesting things about Tolan Man, how old was he? How tall was he? Confirming his way of dying, his last meal, all of these things, what it cannot tell us is why. And so now I'd like to go through theories that have been compiled, starting with a possible criminal status and being killed and placed in a bog as punishment. That is theory number one. So during this time in the Iron Age, in this region, most of the dead were being cremated in large funeral pyres, or even still given a proper in-ground burial. It was believed that the destruction or breaking down of the body was needed for their spirit to move on to the next life or the other world. So the lack of a proper burial or cremation for the Tolan Man and other bog bodies tells us that perhaps he and others were deemed as undeserving of moving on spiritually. This could be because they were criminals or traitors or something, which would also make sense for a less than pleasant last meal. Even today, we feed prisoners awful bland food that lacks nutritional value. It's a tale as old as time. But if he was killed as punishment for something, he wouldn't have been carefully placed in the crouched position. He would have been simply tossed in, or even as we see with some bog bodies, he may have had, this is so terrible, but a lot of bog bodies were pinned to the bottom of the bogs by having their flesh pierced with branches and reeds that pinned them to the bog floor. But not Tolan Man. He was carefully arranged in the proper position. Most burials from this time period were in this crouched position, as I discussed in episode 2. So, well, I guess that was Bronze Age, but Bronze Age through Iron Age, crouched position is the standard. And this leads to some people to believe that he wasn't a criminal, because that kind of respect and care for his body wouldn't have been shown. That being said, it's possible that his body was tossed in and family or friends went back and arranged him in the crouched position to give him dignity and respect in death, at least to some extent. But for the sake of this episode, if it is true that he wasn't a criminal and killed for punishment, the next most feasible explanation for his hanging and boggy grave is ritual human sacrifice. So, for starters, being a victim of human sacrifice can also explain his gross last meal. I will note, our sense of what tastes good is probably very different from people from so long ago who weren't to all of these salts and seasonings and spices that we all have just like in our cupboards. But with ergot having infected some of the grains being fed to him, that's a little weird, because even Iron Age people knew what ergot fungus looked like on grains. Like, they knew how to avoid it. And so feeding it to these bog victims like Tolan Man was likely intentional, because depending on how much ergot poisoning someone has, it can range from being mildly hallucinogenic to putting them into a coma. So hallucinogenics are long since known for ritualistic use. It was often believed that whatever someone was hallucinating was actually beings from other realms or even gods. And in those moments before sacrifice, having them closer to those spirits or gods could be a good thing.
Yeah.
Ergot poisoning could have also been done for more practical reasons, like mild sedation to ensure that the victim complied with the sacrifice, or if they were a criminal, for ease of transportation and killing them. Or maybe it's both. But further evidence for the Tolan man being sacrificed is in the many types of grains used for his porridge, which was weird because the porridge was made with multiple types of grains which spanned the vast surrounding area, and that's unusual for a simple porridge. And it's theorized that, and this was really cool, I only just learned this when researching for this episode, but it's theorized that focusing all of the land's crops and any spirits or gods associated with these different lands into this one meal fed to one person set to be sacrificed would help that one person represent the many. It kind of encapsulates them with the needs of all in whatever it is that they're being sacrificed for, such as fertile crops or even as a type of revenge. And I'm going to quote a book that I'll have below in my sources, Bog Bodies Uncovered, because this is also something new to me. So get this. And I quote, "Ritual violence may not necessarily occur within the enclosed context of a connected group of people. It may instead be directed outwards to other communities. One group could act out its aggression towards its neighbors or to foreigners by venting it upon a single neighbor or foreign individual. It is entirely possible that such injuries reflect surrogacy, wherein the individual person stood for many." Mm-hmm. So I hope that makes sense to everyone, because it took me a couple reads to kind of get it. But it's just another of many theories behind Bog Bodies and Toland Man. If he was a victim of sacrifice, he could have been fed this porridge, perhaps to help with the fertility of all the lands. And that's why it was made from all these different grains from far away. He could have been chosen because people are like, hey, we don't like people from this area. We're going to take one of their people. And again, it's just him kind of encapsulating the many.
He's like a sympathetic magic when you use one thing to represent another thing.
Yes.
And like you burn a candle, and that candle represents, someone else who maybe isn't feeling well. So you burn a candle and you think positive healing thoughts to the candle, and that magic or like that energy is going towards that person, even though that person isn't right in front of you.
Yes, that is a fantastic way to put it, and probably much more easier to understand than the word vomiting that I just did.
Hey, that's why we're here. There's two of us. We bounce each other. We help each other out.
Yep. So yes, he could have been a criminal. It could have been human sacrifice. It could have been sacrificed as a way to take out a group of people's, you know, anger that they have on another. It could have been a combination of these things. And when picking someone for sacrifice, it could be at random. Maybe, again, kill two birds with one stone, literally, and sacrifice a criminal. Victims of sacrifice could be picked intentionally due to their profession. So if they are sacrificing someone to a god or gods for fertile crops, they might sacrifice a farmer. So it's possible that Tolan Man was a farmer. A lot of bogs produce iron, so a metalsmith could be sacrificed in the bog alongside other iron objects to ensure that the bog keeps producing this precious material. And we know this because of the prevalence of iron objects being found in large deposits in other bogs. This wasn't necessarily the case with Tolan Man, but it's within the realm of possibilities. But, and this is very awful, this next part, another group of people often picked for sacrifice was people with physical and mental abnormalities and disabilities. A very tragic facet of an already tragic topic. There is a particularly heartbreaking example of a bog body, which is that of a teenage boy known as Kehausen Boy, who had a malformed hip. He likely had pain and poor mobility, and this is a time period where if someone, even a child, shows no sign of being a working, contributing member of society, so helping to farm, go to battle, do mundane day-to-day duties, they were considered not only just another mouth to feed, but it was viewed as almost a waste of a mouth to feed because they couldn't contribute. They could also be seen as the gods have already punished this person, there's something wrong with them. And we see this with multiple bog bodies. There's another body, I believe, of a young woman who she had a very curved spine, so scoliosis, also likely unable to physically work. And of course, not all disabilities are visible on the bone. So think of intellectual disabilities. And I bring this up because it's another possibility for Toland Man having been picked for sacrifice. Did he have something else going on? Was he having memory loss? Was he having what we now know today as like early signs of Alzheimer's, dementia, anger issues? Like, was there something mentally going on, which is why he was picked? We do not know for sure. We haven't seen any other physical signs from his remains in what we've studied, but it's morbidly entertaining to speculate, I suppose, in trying to answer these questions. And I want to take a moment to note, it can be very easy for us today to judge human sacrifice. Mm-hmm. So pop off our modern lenses for a second. It's an inherently terrible thing to do. Most victims of sacrifice don't want to die, although sometimes people would volunteer. Sometimes people would do that.
I was going to bring that up that, yeah, I mean, he could have also volunteered because, you know, communities were so much more tight-knit then. Mm-hmm. And so it would have been an honor to be sacrificed, you know, like to do that for your community and for the gods that you love so much. Like, hey, yeah, I'm going to be remembered forever because I'm going to go be with the gods and I did it for the community.
Yeah. And like, think about it. Like, he was in his 30s to 40s. Like, he could have had a wife and children, a family. And if you're experiencing this horrible famine, what more honorable thing to do than say, sacrifice me, and this can help ensure that if we please the gods, that crops and livestock will do better, and that's right. Going to save lives. So it could have been something along those lines. So although it is possible that he volunteered himself, most victims, of course, probably didn't and didn't necessarily want to die. People doing the sacrificing often didn't necessarily want to do it either. There were a lot of stigmas around people that were often the ones doing executions. They were sometimes made to live on the outskirts because they dealt with so much death. People didn't want to be near them. And evidence for the guilt and this lack of, or this not wanting to do it, is that a lot of bog victims and how they were killed, even with hanging someone like the Toland Man, it is usually a group effort, because not only just like tactically does that make sense, but this means that they're sharing the guilt of taking the life with others, and it helps to lessen each individual person's guilt. And this next part wasn't really the case with Toland Man, but a lot of other bog bodies show signs of overkill with multiple life-ending injuries. And this can come from not necessarily a place of extreme violence in the sense that they enjoy it, but rather overkill can be done. And it's possible that this happened with Toland Man and we just don't see evidence of other ways things done to kill him other than just hanging. But overkill is often done to sacrifice victims, murders, bodies dumped into bogs, because it hobbles the ghost of the victim. It was believed that really brutalizing the physical body would weaken the spirit of the victim, which could prevent them from seeking spiritual vengeance on their killer or killers. Because again, the act of killing for punishment, for sacrifice, was often shared among many. No one or most people, they don't want to take a life. But back then, it was believed, through their very different understanding of the world around them, they believed that sometimes this was necessary, and that is a desperation that people like us and everyone listening cannot understand and sympathize with, which I guess is a good thing. Like, I don't understand the desperation and need to feel like someone needs to die to help people. But that's just me trying to slightly defend people of the past, not saying that it was a good thing they killed people, but this is why they did. So now we know reasons as to, or possible reasons as to why he was killed. I want to get more into my favorite part of the story, the ghosts, and why these victims were placed specifically in bogs. Earlier, I mentioned that the prevention of decay keeps the spirit from moving on, which naturally leads to quite a haunted place. There was sometimes a belief that those spirits of these bog victims, like Toland Man, remain trapped and linger in the fog that settles over boglands. And this was a little bit later in history, but in the 17th century, a Dutch clergyman, Reverend Pickard, coined the phrase maidens of the mist to describe these spirits and mythical beings, which are believed to inhabit ancient burial mounds, which were near bogs, but also the ghosts within the bogs because of all of the dead that reside in the waters. And I mean, maidens of the mist, like that should have been the name of the podcast. That's so cool. And if anyone listening wasn't obsessed with bogs before this episode, you have to be now. So bogs. Bogs are different. They are a liminal space. They aren't fully land. They aren't fully water. And because the bodies don't break down and decay, it is as if the dead aren't fully dead. To an Iron Age individual, this is otherworldly, especially in how the bog changes the appearance of the dead. The tanning of the skin, the reddish hue given to the hair, is also viewed as bog spirits or spirits from the other world now taking claim of the body, turning it into one of them. And this would lead to the creation of other folklores and superstitions around bogs and bog bodies. There was this belief in bog sprites, and we have stories of peat farmers and other people who are coming across these bog bodies believing that this is a bog sprite that they have just disturbed. They quickly cover them back up and they run away because they don't want that bog sprite to wake up and get them. So just truly a magical place. And more on the liminality of bogs. The rope used to Toland Man also takes us to another tragic facet of the many terrible facets of this. And it is that a lot of the times we have evidence for, and we theorize too, that a lot of these victims, the suffering carried on before their death was prolonged intentionally. So with someone being hung, and this very well could have happened with Toland Man, what they sometimes did is they are, you know, lifted into the air by the noose around their neck just upon their last breath. They were lowered again and then lifted into the air. They're on the brink of death and they're lowered again. And this was done to keep them in that liminal space between life and death for as long as possible, or also to hobble the ghost, to weaken their spirit. And again, we cannot say for sure if this happened with Toland Man's hanging. It may have. This can also be done for spiritually, like liminal reasons if they're being sacrificed. It keeps them close to those spirits or gods for longer, just before they are being killed. And this could also be done for punishment if they wanted them to suffer for longer for the sake of justice. And the spectacle of it all, sacrifices and executions were typically very public events. Thankfully, this didn't happen with Toland Man, but a lot of bog bodies that are really brutalized, it was a whole spectacle, a very specific positioning of the body, slashing of the throat in a certain way for maximum sprayage of blood. It was a show. A very awful show. Moving on through time. Unfortunately, a lot of early bog body discoveries no longer exist to further study and help put these pieces together. Bog bodies were being discovered as early as the 1600s that we have documentation for. And pretty much from then through the 1800s, they were not only removed from their bog graves, but they were also typically given a proper Christian in-ground burial. So they have since decayed. Bog bodies were also, this is, well, a not fun fact, they were eaten sometimes. And this seems to have come from a trend. It's a trend that we saw, I believe, in the Middle Ages, where primarily nobility would eat ground up mummies from Egypt, especially higher ranking mummies, with the belief that consuming their essence could heal them and do good things to them. So when they discovered bog mummies, they were like, oh, hey, like, we got mummies here too. Let's eat them, I guess. They were ground up into powder and sold in small ceramic pots known as mummy pots, which you could buy at pharmacies. Thankfully, a lot of people selling mummy powder, both in the Middle Ages and during the bog body discovery boom, were scamming their clients. It's not like people just know what a bog body dust tastes like,
I guess. You know, this tastes off this time. I wonder if a pharmacist slipped some dirt in here instead.
I've been bamboozled. I hate when I get when my bog body dust is not authentic. So I do
this is
wonder
not
what
organic
that
bog body dust.
yeah, all natural, non-GMO, organic. Probably not vegan though. I do wonder if they would taste like I imagine them tasting like a very dirty, musty, bitter tea because of all the tannins.
Yeah.
In the bog water.
That would make sense.
You could use the bog body powder to make a tea. Anyways. don't go drink bog body tea. So another fun fact. Oh, this is kind of unrelated, but I had to throw this into the episode. So my friend Eve, shout out Eve. Speaking of eating bog bodies, she was telling me this story that she heard, and I really hope this isn't true. I'm telling myself that this is not true because it's disgusting. So she was telling me about this story that she had read where some people found what they thought was bog butter, which is a real thing. Again, like, people in the Bronze Age, people in the Iron Age, they knew that bogs had preservation qualities and you could store things like food in them and it would help preserve them. Things like bog butter, things like bog butter and other foods put into bogs could have also been done as like offerings to gods and stuff and the dead. But ancient bog butter is something we find. And so apparently these people found this fatty deposit and they were like, oh, look, some bog butter. And they did what a lot of really weird archaeologists do, and they tried it. And this is not unheard of. People do that with, like, ancient honey and grains. They get curious, and they want a little taste. Apparently, as it turns out, Eve was telling me that it was not bog butter. It was the preserved body fats from a nearby bog body that leaked out and, like, settled and congealed all together. So... So yeah, have fun imagining that. If I had to be cursed with that information, I want everyone listening to also be cursed with it as well. And hopefully it's not true, because that's foul. And thankfully, our boy, the Toland man, was not found sooner and turned into mummy dust and eaten by weird rich people. Anyways, today you can visit the Toland man, who is on display at the Silkeborg Museum, but not all of him is original. I believe, like, in the display that the public can see, it is just his head that is original. The rest of his body is a recreation made from photos and some of his body parts, which still exist. For context, learning how to preserve bog bodies was not well known or studied in the 1950s, of course, when he was discovered. So he was essentially parceled up in bits and pieces, were sent off for study and to test preservation methods. His head was a priority, of course, and thankfully they were very successful. The secret formula, if you are curious, was removing the bog water cells by placing the head in alcohol. Then it was placed in a different type of liquid, which replaced the alcohol. Then it was placed into paraffin wax, which replaced that liquid. And then it was placed in beeswax, which replaced the paraffin wax.
Wow.
And that's how they did that. Thank goodness for smart people that figure this stuff out. Quite the process. And I imagine very scary for those involved, knowing that they could possibly ruin this perfectly preserved. Like, you're looking into this man's face. Like, that had to add some pressure to it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. In the 1980s, the Silkeborg Museum's director, Christian Fischer, tried to track down all of Tollendmann's body parts to have him pieced back together. And they got all of his body parts back, except for one. The great mystery of the Tollendmann's missing big toe. One of his big toes could not be located. And as it turns out, a conservator, B. Borson Christensen, had successfully preserved it, but he had grown quite fond of the toe and he kept it to himself, allegedly carrying it around in the pocket of his waistcoat to show off to people. I kind of can't blame him. And
Yeah,
what a party trick. I mean, whip that out of your pocket and impress the masses. I would have been impressed. And so sometime after his death, his daughter rediscovers the toe. They confirm it was a Tollendmann's toe, and it was finally returned to the museum in 2016. So fairly recently, it was missing until 2016. And this lady's like, what's this toe? Could this be a Tollendmann's toe? I can't imagine like going through my parents' belongings and just finding a preserved human toe. The most I have is like a random gold tooth family heirloom that no one in the family knows who it belonged to, but it keeps getting passed down and now it's mine. So it's no toe, but it'll do. To start wrapping up this episode, because my voice can't handle much more, the Tollendmann is just one example of many ancient bog bodies. And I feel like I really crammed in a lot of information, but I need people listening to understand that I also left out so much, because eventually I would like to over time cover more bog bodies and the specific things with them. For example, it took everything in me to not really dive into the fact that some bog bodies, not Tollendmann, but others, we have evidence that they were painted with these copper-based pigments that were probably like a bright blue color. And that just gets into like really interesting like body art sacrifice stuff, but I'm going to save that for a future episode. And although we aren't eating ground up bog bodies anymore, we're thankfully not giving them Christian burials in the dirt. There is the modern threat, which I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, which is mass peat farming. The equipment used to farm peat, which is used, you know, peat's used for fuel and for fertilizer. It's caused quite the stir, pun intended, because although modern peat farming does expose a lot of bog bodies, a lot of bog body parts that we're discovering in recent years is because of peat farming. At the same time, as good as that is, they're simultaneously being greatly disturbed and chopped up. We don't know the layer of earth that they were found in. We're finding like, just like, what are we going to learn from just like a single random arm or foot or severed head? It would be nice to have the whole person and learn from them and show them the proper respect they deserve. There's also environmental concerns with the over-farming of peat, but that's also another topic for another podcast to cover. My point in bringing this up is that we are very uncertain what the future holds for peat bogs and the historical finds and mummies held within them, which are being threatened with the issue of mass peat farming, which we are seeing at the present moment, which is very sad. And now, to actually end the episode, I'm so sorry for going on and on. I want to read a little bit from the last paragraph of the book, Bog Bodies Uncovered, because it wraps this all up splendidly. And the author points out that not only were bog bodies sometimes visited as an act of pilgrimage by Iron Age people, it's possible that even Toland Man, if he had been sacrificed for something great, people would visit these bodies. There would be like postmarkers in the ground saying, hey, here's this one. And people would go to pilgrimage to visit them. And we still see that today with them being in museums and people going on essentially pilgrimage to visit them. And so here is what the author states. The respect due these fellow humans is vital for the maintenance of their dignity and, indeed, of our own. The exhibition of Toland Man at the Silkeborg Museum in Denmark, situated in a quiet village on an island waterway, is an example of best practice. The visitor is directed to a small, windowless room, decorated to resemble a peat bog. The sole occupant is Toland Man, inside its perspex case, softly lit and resting on a bed of peat. When I last went to see him in 2000, I was the only person in the room, and I could sit a few inches away in the stillness of his presence, able to look closely at his calm face, with the eyelashes framing closed eyelids and the stubble of a beard. Off the beaten track, Silkeborg has become a place of pilgrimage. It is impossible to visit the museum and its ancient guests and not come away touched with awe. The bog bodies of Iron Age Europe allow us to get as close up and personal to our ancient ancestors as it is possible to be. And that's the episode, my friends. That is Yay. The Toland Man. My throat. Let me sip on my matcha. Tayshia, do you have any thoughts, anything you want to throw in that I might have left out?
No, I don't think so. You did a great job, and I am super excited to explore bogs more and look forward to when we talk about them again.
Yeah, I don't want to count my chicks before they hatch, my eggs before they hatch. My brain is mush right now. My brain is no better than like Toland Man's little mushy preserved brain. My husband and I, for years, we've talked about taking a trip to France. I've never been. I've only been out of the country once, to Scotland, and I'm dying to go to Paris and surrounding areas. And you can fly to Denmark from Paris for not very much, and it's a pretty quick flight. Oh. And I was like, wait a second, what if I visit Toland Man? And so I'm so dead set, hopefully at some point this year, finally flying out of the country for the second time in my life, and then also maybe, fingers crossed, seeing Toland Man.
Oh, you'll have to take so many pictures to show everybody.
Oh my gosh, all of the pictures, getting to see my boy, the Toland Man, and hopefully that happens. And hopefully I don't jinx it by talking about it too much. So thank you everyone for listening. Please leave us a rating and review, ideally bestowing us with 5 stars. Let us know what you think about Toland Man as well. You can find us on Instagram. We're also on Facebook now. We are on Substack, which is a social media site for articles and blog style posts. And we like to release an article which goes along with each episode. So check that out if you want even more. I left this out of the episode, but there's some... Okay. We know what Toland Man looks like. You can see his face. But there's some really, really awful jump scare level, digital recreations people have made.
Yeah, you sent me those.
Like, giving him, like, here's what he would look like, though, with, like, his normal skin tone. And maybe his hair was this color. And some of them are just simply diabolical. Don't do this to the poor guy. Anyways, yes, leave us a rating review. Follow us. Find us on social media. and let us know what topics you would like for us to talk about in the future. Oh, thank you for giving us so many listens. We wanted to plan a little giveaway when we hit 50, and then boom, we hit 50, and we were like, we don't have anything ready. Maybe we'll do a giveaway when we hit 100 listens. And then boom, we hit 100 listens, and we were like, okay, pump the brakes. So,
I was going to say, and I think we're knocking on the door of 150 already. Like,
yeah, and gosh, our Facebook page, not to brag, but our Facebook page has 50 over 50 followers now. Like, watch out, world, here we come. Not nominate us for some podcast awards, please. All right, yes, thank you everyone for tuning in, and until next time. Bye.
Goodbye.